Hey, what's up, shooter heads? Welcome to NWR Connectivity, where we talk about the latest Call of Duty games coming to Nintendo Switch, maybe. I'm your host here at Nintendo World Report Connectivity, Neil Ronahan. Joining me today, as always, John Raritan.
I'm very ready to bro out, as the kids say.
Yeah, let's go say no Russian. Is that still a thing? Do we
it's
care about campaigns?
It's more of a applicable phrase than ever before.
I haven't paid attention to Call of Duty in a long time. Warzone's big, and I know that. The campaign's like released separately, and people don't count it as a real thing. How do I know this? Because of Kyler Murray and the NFL and how he had a homework clause because he plays too much Call of Duty. Thankfully, I think their bye week was around the launch of the game this year. Anyway, Alex DeFreitas is also here. Hey, Alex.
I've played some Warzone. It's pretty good.
I haven't.
So, I mean, it's a battle royale, right?
Yeah. Well, then you get sent to the gulag if you get killed.
Okay, that's charming. How do you win?
By being the last one alive.
Okay, well, like, then what do you do in the gulag?
Oh, yeah, if you don't get killed in the gulag, then you go back. You get, like, a respawn chance.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Call of Duty Warzone is a game about rehabilitation.
Yes.
The criminal justice system works, Neil.
Yeah, they put you in internment camps, and
it's an opportunity to learn. The last Call of Duty I played was the one that had Jon Snow in it, and I was like, I like this one because it looks like Halo.
Was that the future one?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Advanced Warfare.
Or was it Infinite Warfare? I forget. Was there one called Infinite Warfare?
Infinite Warfare was the one with the kitty fiddler on the cover. What's his name?
Kevin Spacey?
That's the one. Yeah.
Kevin Spacey is not the one that was actually in space, despite the Spacey being in his name.
No.
That's disappointing. Gotcha.
I thought Jon Snow shooting dudes on the moon, I had a good time.
That sounds like a good ass time.
That's what I thought. I think the Call of Duty fan base hated it, but I, as not that, was like, that sounds like a rad video game. Let's do that.
Advanced Warfare came out 8 years ago?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Oh, yeah. Side note, have you seen the SNL skit where Kit Harington plays like an NPC in a shooter game?
Yes.
He's so good at that.
Well, he's a professional.
Yeah.
He has
experience.
8 year veteran.
Yeah. I was very impressed.
Anyway, so this is going to be a Call of Duty centric episode, largely precipitated by the like 11 p.m. Eastern time drop from Xbox head Phil Spencer, where he was like, so the FTC is trying to shut down this deal that we're trying to get to buy Activision. So we are going to tweet in the dead of night that Microsoft, after they buy Activision Blizzard King, ABK, all the kids are saying it, Call of Duty will be on Nintendo systems for the next 10 years. They're making a 10-year commitment to that. Alongside that, there was also news that they're committing to releasing it on Steam. As usual, the internet thought this was terrible.
Okay, I'm off Twitter. What are the responses? I need to know what the knee-jerk responses were.
It's just more that, like...
Should I just tell you? I mean, should I just... Hang on. Let's just pull up Phil Spencer.
Okay. Yeah.
I know that I quote tweeted him after this came out. And essentially just made the comment from the entire basis of Sony's argument on this whole thing has been that Microsoft is going to make this exclusive, and that's bad for consumers because people deserve the right to play their games on the console of their choice, which is a dumb argument, but like whatever. The brilliance of this move is that Microsoft has essentially called the bluff, and they've now positioned themselves where they are in fact making the game less exclusive than it's always been, and that if you block this acquisition, you are actually making the game more exclusive, which is what you all didn't want to do, right? Because that's bad for the consumers. And holy shit, it's amazing.
I saw this right before I went to bed and thought it was the funniest thing in the world, and then I woke up and was like, let's see what people are... Oh no. And it's largely like, I don't disagree with people being like, this is a naked bargaining chip.
Of course it is.
But at the same time, like, yes, it is. And Activision has had a very rough recent history, but I think Microsoft is a better run company, or at least a company more open to change than Activision. So I think the idea of Microsoft buying Activision from purely that standpoint is probably going to be a net positive. And I think the idea of having, you know, Microsoft working with Activision and developers on Call of Duty, of figuring out ways to bring Call of Duty to Nintendo platforms, is an interesting prospect. I don't know if the games will be good, but it will be interesting.
And that's the thing, is we don't know what form this takes. Like, we don't know if that means bringing the yearly Call of Duty release to Switch, or if that means porting all of the Xbox 360 Call of Duty games to Switch. Like, there are no, this is a very tentative thing. Because once again, like, this is an agreement that, like, based on the wording, it does appear that, like, they've talked to Nintendo about this too. Like, people have been talking about it, but this is also a company they don't own yet. So, like, this is a very tentative thing.
Yeah, it is theoretical. They probably can't, like, talk to Infinity Ward and Treyarch and Raven Software and Sledgehammer Games about specifics. It's probably a lot of, like, you know, napkin math about, like, can we make this work?
It's probably not contractually binding, right? It's just lip service
now. Yeah, I was going to say, like, yeah, there is nothing legally binding about this other than I do think there could be something in that if he says this, and this is part of the reason that convinces regulators to stop hounding them. If he were to not follow through on this, then that would probably be. If this is like part of the thing that is going to, you know, push it over the edge of people being like, all right, you can do the purchase. But apparently, and I've not really cared that much about, like, Call of Duty. So I can't verify this, and I've not looked to verify this. Apparently, Phil Spencer in interviews has been making, like, pretty pointed comments about how he wants to, you know, like, bring more Activision titles to Nintendo. And I think Call of Duty has been specifically named a number of times, which also might be lip service. But dude, let Ori be brought to Switch. I forget, is Moon Studio straight up just owned by Microsoft?
I think so.
Yeah, like, that is a Microsoft game that is on Switch.
And I think this is something they're wrestling with right now. But I do think they have a history of, if they believe that they can make more money selling their game on more platforms without it negatively affecting their brand, they will do that.
I mean, look what they're doing with Steam. Like, remember when they started, I think it was around the pandemic when they started releasing, like, you know, Sea of Thieves and stuff onto Steam, as opposed to not just having it through Xbox, and those dominated the Steam charts for a very long time.
Yeah, and it is weird to think of that as a different, I mean, I guess you still bought a copy of Windows to play it, but, yeah, you know, yeah, that is a different marketplace.
Yeah, and it was a place that I believe before then they weren't really on Steam.
No,
they had their own launcher.
Yeah, this has been a from, like, there's Ori and there's Minecraft. This has been a consistent thing that they've done. And, like, yes, there is stuff like Starfield, obviously, where they have kept it. But I think to them, there might be this delineation of, like, okay, this is like a new IP that looks good on our thing. This IP has existed forever and has always been multi-platform. This looks good on everything. Like,
yeah,
I feel like they're very aware of how to use those brands. And yeah, so, like, while this is obviously, yes, of course this is a chess move. Like, some guy on Twitter yelled at me for being a fanboy for laughing at this. And it's like, no, like, obviously this is a chess move. Of course this is a chess move.
Yeah.
But they'll do it. Like, I mean, they're not lying.
And I feel like a thing that makes me, I guess, like, more excited for the prospect of a company being backed into a corner and making a game that, as is in its current form, will require a lot of work to put on Nintendo platforms, is the fact that I'm not going to say every Call of Duty that released on a Nintendo system was a banger, but I will say that they are interesting. I think that if you look at first-person shooters specifically by a third party on Wii, I think some of those Call of Duty releases are among the best, maybe the best, because Treyarch, the developer, I guess they still are, because now it's every 3 years, more or less. Like, just looking at a list, it seems like Sledgehammer Games one might have been delayed, so then the Treyarch one was every 2 years for 1 year. But yeah, Treyarch, who's not the original developer of Call of Duty, but now have been associated with the franchise for close to 20 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they were big fans of Wii. They made a lot of Wii ports of games, including ports of Infinity Ward's developed Call of Duty games. And Treyarch's work on Wii and the Call of Duty games, which spans 3, World at War, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops and bizarrely Modern Warfare 3, a game that I didn't think actually got ported to Wii. And to my recollection, and I actually reviewed one of them, at least one of them, they were pretty good ports. Used the Wii pointer controls very good.
Well, and they're, unlike a lot of Wii ports, they weren't really separate games. Like, early on, it was, it was just the campaigns. They didn't have multiplayer at first, but those campaigns were one-to-one. Obviously, they looked graphically worse, but they were one-to-one with what was on the other platforms. Like, they were sort of, like, some of the early impossible ports, is what we would call them if they were happening today on Switch. And then eventually they did, like, they got multiplayer and they got zombies, and, like, they were pretty much feature complete by the end. Love or hate Call of Duty, those were really technically impressive ports for the time.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, Wii being an SD console, if you're to go back to them, they're probably not going to hold up that well.
They didn't look great at the time. I mean, they looked okay for Wii games, but they weren't the conduit too. Let's just say that.
And then there were the DS games as well. I believe either all made by Nspace or predominantly made by Nspace, which were impressive that they just got that game working on DS. And then Wii U, Black Ops, what was it? It was Black Ops 2 and Ghosts came to Wii U. And especially like Black Ops 2 was probably one of the best online games on the Wii U.
Both of those were fantastic Wii U ports. They both gave you the option to, like, you could go online with a friend and one of you would play on the TV and one of you would play on the gamepad.
Oh, God. But
you could play online together. Like, that remains some of the best online implementation in a Nintendo game, period.
I think we might have a Jared Rosenberg special of an interview with a Treyarch developer talking about how they got that to work. But I'm not. I remember either having a conversation or watching Jared record an interview about this. For all I know, I could have been interviewing the person from Treyarch. I don't remember. but yeah, I mean, man, Treyarch and their Nintendo porting days. Let's get them back. Let's all those people who probably left because the last time they touched a Nintendo system was 10 years ago. They should come back and start making Call of Duty games for Switch.
Yeah, all those skills are transferable.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if any of those guys from the Wii days are still there, they know how to do some gyro controls.
Honestly, that would be a big differentiator because Xbox, like, even the current controller doesn't allow for gyro controls.
No.
And as a Splatoon player, like, that would be a pretty neat add to have gyro within Call of Duty.
I mean, it is the kind of thing where I do understand people approaching it from a cynical view. I just think that there is an exciting part of this, of the fact of we might get some interesting Call of Duty games. Yeah, what's the lateral thinking of Wither Technology? Like, let's go. Let's see some smart developers make a cool Call of Duty game for a Nintendo system.
By the way, I found the interview. And Neil, I will reveal to you that you were literally holding the microphone. I just, like, the thumbnail pops up for the video and it's just you holding the microphone to these guys. If you go to NintendoWorldReport.com, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 interview. It's a very well-titled article. The actual interview is on our old YouTube channel. One of these days, we'll collect all of our Wii U content into a documentary or something. But
yeah, that sounds
for
like
now,
a good
you
idea.
Can watch it there.
Yeah, I knew I had a feeling that's probably from the Wii U preview event in New York in September 2012. I would venture a guess.
I don't know.
If not,
oh yes,
maybe
Nintendo Wii U preview.
Oh, sweet.
Yes, event. Yep.
All right. At least that memory is on point.
It was in New York on September 13th of 2012.
Yeah. Look at that.
Look at our website.
Woo. Yeah, because then after the system came out, every third party was like, we don't make Wii U games. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Except for Skylanders. Skylanders did okay on Wii U.
Activision stuck around for a while. Like, the fact that there are two Call of Duty games on that thing.
That's surprising. More than, I don't know, this is one more than Mass Effect games, one more than Madden's.
Everybody will make one Wii U game. It takes a special kind of stupid to go back and make a sequel.
Waiting for Rockstar to make their one Wii U game.
Yeah.
Rockstar, they couldn't get like Red Dead Redemption running on Switch. Somehow they got it running on a Wii U. It's coming out next year after the store shuts down. So from this point forward, let's say so 2023 to 2033, with 10 years of Call of Duty on Nintendo, what do you guys think is going to be the rollout of Call of Duty on Nintendo over the next decade?
So I do think they get Warzone running on this thing, because Warzone still runs on base Xbox One. And I think if it can run on base Xbox One, then it can run poorly on Switch, but it will still run. It'll be like an Apex Legends level of game, so it won't be pretty, but it will be there. And then I think it all depends on how long they continue to support PS4 and Xbox One. Because if once they make that jump to PS5 and Series X exclusively, unless the Switch U is a powerhouse, like,
unless it
that's
melts
a big
faces.
Jump. That is a big, big jump. And so I feel like they might do a bunch of like the older ones. I mean, they can do the Xbox One, PS4 ones, but then especially like the 360 ones ought to be easy. You could do like the Modern Warfare trilogy. Same for Black Ops. There are four Black Ops.
I think there might be more than that.
There's four for sure, because I remember when the fourth one came out. So like they did Black Ops 2, and it was like the Roman numerals for 2, and 3 was the Roman numerals for 3. But when 4 came out, instead of IV, they did III. And I wanted to stab many people.
Black Ops Cold War came out in 2020. That is Black Ops 5, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that maybe we get a couple as the Xbox One, PS4 die off. And I guess we don't know like how soon. Like, it won't be like if Xbox acquires Activision next year, it won't be like 2023's Call of Duty game is on Switch. Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, that'd be crazy, but
it'll take time to, you know, be developed. Unless this is all a dumb bluff and they were already planning on releasing Switch games and they just let Microsoft know, because Activision does want to be acquired by Microsoft. So,
yeah,
maybe they're already working on it.
But Alex, what say you? What are your hopes for Call of Duty on Nintendo?
I don't really follow Call of Duty. I'm not super invested in the franchise. However, the neat thing that we've seen before with things like Skyrim or Diablo coming to Switch is that they'll add like goofy Nintendo editions. And okay. That's what I want to see. I want to see Link's crossbow from Link's Crossbow Training as a playable weapon in Warzone.
It is weird that Link has never used a crossbow again.
Linkle did.
Linkle
used like dual crossbows.
Yeah.
Badass. Get Linkle.
Yeah.
Get Linkle. Call of Duty.
Bring over the Splattershot Pro.
Splatoon in my Call of Duty. Okay. Let's talk.
Let's do a Splatfest where you have to choose between the three developers.
It's not ink. It's just the blood of your enemies. It just paints the ground. It's like a really, really dark version of Splatoon.
It's still the same soundtrack, but it's just Call of Duty.
Yeah. You're like becoming squids and just going through blood, and you just come up and like there's just blood dripping down the inkling's face.
Alternatively, like in Call of Duty, you can like dress up your soldiers in like snazzy streetwear.
Yeah. Because then you need to like go do some Black Ops mission where you need to like kill a bunch of civilians.
It's like totally serious, and then this very realistic man just turns into a cartoon squid. Or they're fighting inklings, and they're like, "Don't worry, it's just a kid." Oh shit! It's a squid. It's a squid now.
The new campaign hinges over a heartbreaking mission where you're like, oh, it's just a bunch of squids in there. And then after you bomb it, you find out, no,
they were kids. They were kids now.
War crimes.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time for Call of Duty. It's nope. It's really not that far from the actual games. This will be interesting. I know that like capitalism, bad, buying all the things, boo, evil company. But I want to see what happens. Like, I want this to go through because I just want to see it.
It's the kind of thing where, yes, consolidation, bad, capitalism, bad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's a lot of troubling signs, like big picture about consolidation throughout all media. Like how Disney now owns, 75% of our childhoods minimum. But with this, I think Activision... It feels like a hell of an aside from the horrific worker conditions and harassment and people dying, yes. which is a hell of a thing to set aside. But viewing it From a pure games perspective, it's kind of felt like they've been, I guess it's more from what I want out of them, they have not been consistently hitting the mark. You look at things like Tony Hawk 1 and 2, like that remake, absolutely incredible. And then they canceled Tony Hawk 3 and 4, that remake.
Well, and like, I mean, the Call of Duty games are still selling very well.
Yeah.
But if you chart them, they are trending down.
Yeah.
Like Activision is fine right now, but I think if you follow where the trend lines are going, I don't know where they'd be in a decade.
Yeah, because they don't have a huge portfolio. It is like so heavily focused into Call of Duty.
They have a huge portfolio of IPs, but that doesn't, they're not utilizing them.
As far as games that they're actually releasing, because I mean, and Diablo has been very messy as of late, although still successful, I'm pretty sure. But then once again, looking at it from a selfish perspective, I still think Skylanders and Guitar Hero, Guitar Hero, if we want to talk about capitalism fuckery, go. I think there was a pretty good oral history on Guitar Hero. I forget where, I wish I remembered where it was. But it was like an oral history of it where it's basically like Activision showed up and just swung its dick around and then like ruined everything. But it's the kind of thing that from covering Activision a lot during that era, their PR, very easy to work with, very friendly people, is I noticed that even as they did have, they had their safe things like Call of Duty. But then you look at Skylanders and Guitar Hero and they might have kind of milked those to death. But there's innovation in both of those games, definitely through a warped view of like, how can we get every last cent out of this game? But a lot of innovation came out of that and was prospered because of Activision. Like those Skylanders games, I still would say some of the best games of their time. They let the Tony Hawk series lead to a terrible peripheral based game that, yes, that was done in a way to capitalize on how Guitar Hero was successful. But that's a weird game that got made. DJ Hero, secretly incredible, only got made because Activision could be like, yeah, we could put a lot of R&D into this giant plastic instrument that's doomed to fail. I don't think that's the Activision we're going to see with Microsoft, but I think the Activision we're going to see with Microsoft is going to be one that is not as afraid of, you know, going back to the hits and not immediately, you know, stopping making a new Spyro because maybe sales. I mean, I think the Spyro Reignited did very well, but like not just cutting Skylanders off the heels because they milked it too dry and sales dipped.
Yeah. Current Activision seems the things they want to stick to, they stick to way too hard for way too long. And when they do try something, even when it seems to work from a sales perspective, they're very quick to abandon ship. Because, yeah, like, I mean, I think, like, both the Crash and Spyro thing, and at least Crash did get a sequel. Of the two of those, I don't know how we wound up with Crash getting a sequel and Spyro not, when Crash is objectively a horrible game and everyone agrees about that.
I think Crash kind of sucked, and Crash the Spyro game, sorry.
Crash is awful.
Actually kind of good.
If you like Crash Bandicoot, feel bad about yourself. whereas Spyro is, like, a really pretty solid game. First one's very simple, but like those games are pretty darn good. I'd play a new one. The ones on GameCube with Elijah Wood are hilarious and awful, but you know, might get better.
If I had one desire for Activision specifically related to Call of Duty, and I know it's impossible because now it's been over a decade since Raven Software no longer made original games. Well, I guess the Call of Duty games are original, but they're not even, I think they're like a co-developer primarily. Like if we can go back and if maybe Phil Spencer can like use time travel to like get the Raven Software from the 2000s to come back, because, or even just re-release some of those games, figure out some deal with Marvel, give me Wolverine God of War again. Let's re-release old X-Men Legends games. Is that possible? Probably not. I don't know. Let's try. Singularity, incredible first person shooter from the 360 PS3 era. Raven did the Jedi Knight games, Heretic, Hexen. Like give me that legacy, damn it.
Well, you'll be delighted to know that the Jedi Knight games have already been
rescued. That is true. And I think Hexen, who owns Heretic and Hexen.
I have no idea. The people who own them probably don't know either.
It might be id. So.
Oh, they already have it.
That can happen. Yes. At least it published it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't fully know. This is just a glance. But
doesn't Hexen use their engine?
Yeah, it uses a Doom engine. So yeah, I would assume Hexen and Heretic might be owned by Microsoft.
My one issue with this plan of Phil Spencer traveling back to the year 2000 or so to grab Raven Software and bring them to the modern age is that probably has a butterfly effect of Whisker Squadron not existing. And I'm already financially invested in that game. And so, Phil Spencer, I need you to just like, don't time travel until after that comes out.
Yeah.
Like, I have money in that.
Or tell Aaron Sanfilippo to just leave the company.
Yeah. Like, listen. So before Phil Spencer goes to the past, we have to send Aaron to the past to warn past Aaron. You have to get out now so that John's investment in Whisker Squadron won't be lost. What? Yeah.
Have you ever played Hexen or Heretic?
Neither of those. Yeah, I think I've heard of Hexen.
I played the N64 version of one of those games. I know.
I think Hexen was on N64.
Yeah.
It's like a dark medieval fantasy version of Doom.
Okay.
From my memory, I think you just punch stuff. I've played it like once.
Yeah, it's been like 20 years, which is part of the reason why I'd like to see it re-released on modern platforms.
I do like the idea of Doom where instead of having guns, you just punch things. Like, that's a good idea.
I think you can. I mean, you can play Doom like that.
The entirety of it? Is it?
I don't know if I'm sure like someone's beat it without using a weapon.
Okay.
But yeah, like you can switch to unarmed and just punch things.
That makes me think of my Bioshock 1 build that I where it was just the crowbar and like the B hand. Like that was maxed that out and just destroyed the world.
Literally any 90s Doom Engine game I want to be playable on my Switch.
That seems like a viable path.
I love those games. Yeah. It is weird. I was on Game Pass the other day and scrolling and saw Doom 64 on there, and that will never not be weird to me. A, that Doom 64 is available on a modern platform, and B, that I can play a game called Doom 64 on the Xbox. It's just so strange.
Yeah, I think that's all we have to say about Call of Duty. Any parting shots, fellas?
I'll say it here so that I have to do it, but I'm going to work on some sort of Call of Duty Wii feature, and that'll carry about as much weight as the many other features that I've settled on here that never... happened.
Someone needs to make a list.
It's like every time that a game developer gets crap for not having something in their game that they mention in an interview, I just think about all the times I say in a connectivity episode, like, I'm going to make this video, and then it doesn't happen.
It's the kind of thing where there was the one time where I said we were going to do a game club, and then somebody did a game club, so maybe if we just keep on bringing up videos.
if I just do it, then eventually Matt will make it instead.
Yeah, we'll do it as a joke.
Yeah, perfect.
April Fool's. It would be a shame if on April Fool's we had a Call of Duty Wii and DS video.
We did wait for Alex to be on the episode to say this, so
yeah,
it's all fair perfectly point. Timed.
We got anybody play the Mario Kart DLC?
No? Not yet.
No,
I am probably gonna play that after this, though.
Yeah, seems good. The item switching stuff is honestly fascinating. That they added that in.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see the internet is using it the right way. Like, they're not turning off the items.
They're making it more chaos.
They're like, hang on, what's the worst? It's like when I play, like, my custom item settings for Super Smash Bros. Are just anything that explodes. Because I believe that's more in keeping with Sakurai's vision. And I feel like that's the way to play Mario Kart too.
When we did that ill-fated Smash Brothers Wii U League, one of my favorite things about it was seeing whatever nonsense James Jones would.
Oh, we did have. Yeah, I forgot that was a thing that we did.
It is. And like, I don't want to go down the path of talking about the Smash competitive scene. All I'm saying is that you should abide by my rule sets for the Smash competitive scene, which is home team makes the rule set. It's just insanity.
Yeah, if you're feeling down about the Smash competitive scene, just go. Scroll back through YouTube to the NWR Smash League that we did 1 year in which Justin Berube just holds everyone down and just pisses all over their face repeatedly.
But there are, well, I mean, I think some of the matchups between him and Windy Man, I mean, like it was like kind of like seeing the superhero at the end of a movie where it's like, yeah. Oh, like the villain might get him this time, but not really. But there were some pretty tense matchups throughout that, and like some really good moments. And a lot of those moments were only brought on by the craziness of the items and the insanity of James Jones's rule sets.
I remember that in my matchup against Justin, there was this one point where I hit him and I was just like, yes, like,
you made God bleed.
I did it. Like, his percentage is not zero. I can die now. I didn't want to die with his percentage still at zero.
My favorite custom rule set is just assist trophies in Pokemon. So you're basically just like summoning monsters against each other the entire time.
Making it get the slowdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody, 8-player ice climbers, only assist trophies in Pokemon. How many characters can be
set
on screen?
The item right too high.
Yeah. Have you played 8-player ice climbers? So there are 16 characters on screen that all look the same. That was Sakurai's vision.
John, like, I have a hard time finding like two other people who want to play Ice Climber.
You need real friends.
We need to do like exhibition matches of just 8-player insanity.
Yeah. That'd be a good like narrowing down the field at the beginning of the tournament thing.
Yeah.
You start in groups of 8.
If only we did like panels at PAX again, could do some 8-player Smash Brothers matches.
I think we get a bunch of people to volunteer to do that. Like, everybody wants to play Smash, but then we hand them the controllers and everybody's already set to Ice Climbers.
and too late, like, the match is starting.
Yep. Just watch them all weep.
Should we go to the listener mail?
We do have some listener mail. Let's go to it.
Chariot Goblin wrote in saying, in the last episode, you were discussing Nintendo's output in 2022. I feel that Switch's odd years have been better. We seem to be in a pattern. Here is my analysis. 2017 was fantastic. 2018 was meh. Smash Ultimate was basically 2019. 2019 was great. 2020 was awful and bleak. 2021 was great. It was at least better than 2020. And 2022 has been meh, okay. My analysis is obviously very subjective, but I think we can all agree that 2018 and 2020 were weak years for Switch. Next year could be better if the pattern continues. I think that's kind of right.
Yeah.
I think there's some wiggle. Like, I do definitely agree. I think 2017 is one of the best launch years of like any console ever.
That's correct.
It's hard to argue with it.
And 2018 is just littered with ports. I don't think it's a bad year, but if you have been invested in the like Nintendo and you played the Hyrule Warriors and Tropical Freeze and all that jazz on Wii U, like, 2018 was very unexciting. Smash Brothers was obviously a highlight.
2018 was also the year of Labo.
Yeah.
Which, like, a weird example of a first party Nintendo product on Switch just not happening.
Yep. Yeah, 2019 was pretty good. I mean, I think Sword and Shield are great. I think that Ring Fit Adventure is one of the best games on Switch. What other 2019 games were there?
Astral Chain. Probably
Three
still...
Houses, of course.
Well,
yeah, game of the year winner, Three Houses.
against my objections, yes.
Yoshi's Crafted World, Mario Maker 2 wasn't the best. I did Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, tying into our Raven Software chat, because Raven Software did X-Men Legends 1 and 2 and Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is a game that is like so B-tier it hurts. But I played a lot of that video game.
It is fun. I didn't play any of the DLC, but I did beat the game, which I don't know if I did for the other ones, to be honest.
I definitely did with the other. I love those games. But Ultimate Alliance 3, I rolled credits, and I think I played the first DLC and never got around to playing the other two. But I've always kind of intended to go back, because apparently the third one like has a cliffhanger or some shit for another game that's probably never going to happen.
It's weird that Ultimate Alliance 3 is still Nintendo exclusive.
Yeah.
That doesn't appear to have been timed.
And it didn't even, like, it sold okay. I think that's a game that if it hit
I assume so, yeah.
I think it passed a million. I think it's on the million sellers list, but it's not like, I don't know if it hit 2 million. Which, like, I mean, that's not like a crushing failure or anything, but just like the fact that it was a, you know, Marvel game that had Thanos as a villain that came out in 2019 seems like it didn't hit the expectations that might have been in store. Although I also think the fact that it came out like a month or two after Endgame probably reduced its impact.
Yeah.
Link's Awakening, Dragon Quest XI, Luigi's Mansion 3 was also that year. And then 2020, yeah, I mean, that's pandemic related, but 2020 was a weaker year, although...
It's hard to call it weak when Animal Crossing hit.
Yeah.
Like, love or hate Animal Crossing, it was not weak for the wallet for Nintendo.
Paper Mario the Origami King is a game that I will probably be stumping very hard to be, like, when we get to an eventual, like, what are the best games on Switch? It will be me shouting Paper Mario the Origami King. I think that game's a masterpiece. My 4-year-old has started playing it. What he started referring to as New Mario, to which I had to correct him that this game is 2 years old. Get over it. But now he calls
it Paper Mario. That's like half his life ago.
Age of Calamity is great. I want to say that.
Yeah.
He has Xenoblade Chronicles, definitive edition.
Yeah, I mean, like...
It was life-changing, okay, Neil?
It was for you.
I'm a different person for me, it was because of that game. Yeah.
I thought it was great. I think it is indeed the definitive edition of that game.
I would agree. Actually, you know what? 2020, I think it kind of slaps. It is limited by the fact that the pandemic hit, which is reasonable.
I do think Age of Calamity was... I love that game so much.
Yeah.
I just wish that they made a version for Switch.
And that was the start of how you could say that for probably every other Nintendo release.
Yeah.
Pikmin 3 Deluxe, a great version. If they called that Pikmin 3 Definitive Edition, I would probably disagree because Bingo Battle does not have online. But Pikmin 3 Deluxe is very good.
I still haven't bought that game.
Yeah,
it was on my...
Yeah,
it's always on my go-to list.
It's very good.
Man, last year was so good. Bowser's Fury and Metroid Dread in the same year.
Wow. Two just 10 out of 10 masterpieces.
I do, but then you look at the things in between it.
Doesn't matter.
I to an extent, I kind of agree with that take, but then I look at like the new Pokemon Snap kind of didn't hit the mark for me.
It is... okay.
Yeah.
If you wanted new Pokemon Snap, this is that exactly.
Famicom Detective Club 1 and 2 are games that I'm very glad got released in English, but I don't really care that much. Super Rush was okay. I feel like Super Rush has aged better because I think Strikers was so disappointing to me.
I'm in the spicy Super Rush was always good camp still.
I'm the spicier Strikers is better than Super Rush Camp now.
Ooh. Ooh. We might have to fight.
Let's go when you're a jet. I think my thing with Super Rush is once they like added the full game, that it got a lot better. Because at launch, it had like 4 or 5 courses, and they wound up adding like another 4 in DLC. I think if I picked up that game and was like, oh, this is a brand new game with everything that they added in the DLC, I probably would be way less ornery about it.
Yeah.
Skyward Sword HD rules.
Still
Mario Party
still
Superstars.
Great.
Really good. Yeah,
probably the best Mario Party game I've ever played.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Mario Party 5 is actually a lot of fun. And 6. Both of those are great.
I think I have both of those and I don't know if I've played them.
Remember Game Builder Garage?
No.
Yeah, I own that.
Me too.
I managed to get Game Builder Garage to kind of make a Star Fox game, and then I never played it again.
I think Game Builder Garage is a game that I might revisit as my son gets a little bit older.
Can you download what other people have made on that?
No, you cannot.
Okay. Yeah, there's your problem. Damn.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem right there.
And then I think 2022 is weirdly barren compared to other years.
Well, the first half... pretty good.
What I was gonna say is the first half, it like really up until Xenoblade 3, I think it's a fantastic year. It's just that then they kind of forgot that there was a holiday season.
Yeah. There's still time to throw Advance Wars out. We can get that out by Christmas.
Imagine that gets shadow dropped at the Game Awards.
Honestly, why not?
Yeah, that is a Game Awards level announcement.
You might as well. That's the bar is what? Cranky Kong? Sure. Shadow drop, do it.
I mean, here's the thing. Shadow drop it. Don't actually have an announcement in the Game Awards. Just release it that night.
That'd be...
Yes.
That'd actually be the best way to build hype around the game, is if Nintendo just leaked it.
Yeah, and Nintendo has nothing in the Game Awards.
Yeah. I mean, they could tie it into getting Call of Duty games. They're like, now we have games with a lot of problematic things about the Russians. So to celebrate, here's Advance Wars.
As I'm kind of just looking at a list of Nintendo's over throughout Switch, if you guys had to say, what are your three favorite Switch games made by Nintendo? Boy.
Okay, I'm gonna rule out. Should I rule out anything that's a port?
So Breath of the Wild is technically ruled out.
Because that allows me to rule out Breath of the Wild and Witcher 3 and No Man's Sky and
Nintendo published.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think definitely
Metroid Dread.
Yeah.
This
gets hard very quickly to limit it to three, because just looking at the list, I'd probably put Xenoblade 3 on the short list. Arceus and Kirby and the Forgotten Land. I feel like only one of those three games would make it, but those are all very good games. Metroid Dread, Bowser's Fury, mm-hmm. even though that's technically a port. Bowser's Fury as itself might be one of my favorite games on Switch. Origami King, as I mentioned. Hell, Age of Calamity, I don't think would make the top three, but that's a damn good game.
It might for me. Yeah.
Although I actually kind of look at the older ones. I mean, yeah, Breath of the Wild and Odyssey, I think, would be up there for me.
Right.
Yeah, if Breath of the Wild counts as not a Wii U game, then that's easy.
That is number one.
That is one of the best games that has been made by a human.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, probably Xenoblade 3, and probably Metroid Dread. If you can get me a version of Bowser's Fury that doesn't also force me to have 3D World, then that'd be up there.
I think for me, I mean, Breath of the Wild's kind of it's it has its spot. Three Houses for sure. I honestly think Kirby the Forgotten Land is such a delight. Splatoon 3, despite it kind of being a disappointment, it is still the best version of Splatoon, and I love Splatoon.
I get so, that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be somewhere in there. And yeah, Mario Odyssey and Bowser's Fury, Metroid Dread. I think a lot of these games are spread out through all of the years, honestly.
I have the problem of I think a lot of my favorite games are unfortunately also Wii U games, so that kind of limits also what I can choose.
I think if I had to pick three, I mean, Breath of the Wild, but let's say that's technically a Wii U port, that doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
I think my three would be, oh god, my heart says Origami King, Xenoblade 3, and Metroid Dread. I think my head replaces Origami King with Mario Odyssey, and maybe Forgotten Land knocks out Xenoblade 3.
Yeah, Odyssey is good, but I feel like I can only put one 3D Mario game on my list, and I think Bowser's Fury just blows Odyssey out of the water.
I will blame my child for why I think I put Odyssey over Bowser's Fury.
Yeah, and I should replay Odyssey.
With a child.
Yeah, can I borrow one?
I'll send one in the mail.
Just I assume any child will do.
Seeing his unbridled enthusiasm for Odyssey has definitely changed my mind over it. Where a game that I enjoyed, but I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8 when I first played it in 2017.
Yeah.
Agreed. And now I think there are things that game does as far as just a raw playfulness that video games don't really do that well. But game does it so well.
It's very friendly and cozy and fun. The only flaw I can give it is that the endorphins wear off when you're constantly giving me the reward. But if I'm a child, then maybe that's not an issue.
Dark side, like, I think the post-game stuff is, like, I mean, I do like Mushroom Kingdom and everything, but, like, the dark side of the moon and the darkest side of the moon, I don't care.
Yeah.
I think for me, Three Houses, I think I'll also say Mario Odyssey, and I'll throw in Splatoon 3.
I do, like, I mean, Metroid Dread, I think that is one that top three, like, has to be there for me. Have you guys come across, I've noticed it more recently, a lot of people kind of being like, I don't even want to say revisionist because it was only a year ago. There's been some Dread, like, I feel like we've gotten past the honeymoon period and people are like, I didn't, it's too hard, it's not as good.
I mean, the people who said Dread was too hard, they're in the comments of my review. It's very hard to argue with that without sounding gatekeepy, but that game, if you play the game the way the game wants you to play it, I do not think you will find it that hard, and that's where I'll leave it. If you're finding it hard, you might be misunderstanding what the game wants from you, and maybe that's the game's fault, but it's not Contra. It's a game about being smart and clever and taking your time and outthinking your opponent, not outshooting them.
Yep, trial and error. Sometimes finding sneaky ways to beat Kraid multiple ways.
My advice for anyone playing like a Dark Souls game for the first time is go into every boss fight and don't even attempt to attack them on your first try. Like, just go in there and learn how to dodge, and then you die. And then once you can dodge consistently, like, then start adding in attacks. And that's the same way you play Metroid Dread. You go into a boss fight, you don't worry about killing them. You just worry about dodging, and you'll learn the pattern, and then you can kill them.
Yeah.
If you just go in and try to shoot them, it's hard. It's supposed to be.
There's things that Dread does as a Metroidvania that I don't think other Metroidvania, like the indie Metroidvanias, really capture as well.
No.
There's something about, like, the way that game just handles exploration and, you know, going around the environment, even if it isn't. It is a little bit more like, I don't want to say straightforward, but you're guided on a path through that game. If you try to go around the path, sometimes that there's brick walls, but I feel like it's hidden. It's obscured a little bit, the fact that you're guided on a path.
Right. And it opens up pretty quickly. Like, there are definitely moments where it's like, I need you to go down this hallway.
Yeah.
But, like, it's for the most part. And I know, you know, Matt's talked extensively about, you know, speedrunning it and sequence breaking it and all of that stuff. And the fact that stuff is available speaks a lot to how open
it is. It's really cool.
And it guides you, but not in a go right here kind of way, but more in just the game design just happens. There were times playing that game where I thought I was going out of my way to explore and accidentally wound up where I wanted to be because the level design was just that good. That without thinking about it, it got me to go where it wanted. And that's wonderful.
I've heard people complain that it's too good. Like, it spells out things too much for you just via the game design, which, like, for me is not a problem at all.
Right. But that's what I want. I don't want a dot on a map that says go right here. And, like, right. Here's exactly how to get there. But I just want the game to show me all of the things that God of War guy doesn't understand. Like, I just want smart level design that guides my eyes to where I need to go. And, like, Metroid Dread is so incredibly good at that. In a way that, like, very, very few things are, even outside of Metroidvanias. But also Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity is fantastic.
Yes. So is Three Hopes. Three Hopes is real good.
I might try playing that at some point. I don't like Three Houses.
Just say you hate Fire Emblem. Just say it.
That's the thing. I liked some of them somewhat. I think I just, I really, really hated Three Houses. The less about the combat Fire Emblem has gotten, the more I've disliked it.
Well, let me tell you about Three Hopes. It's a game in which you basically skip all the school bullshit, go right to the war, and all you do is fight in a Musou game.
See, that sounds more, but I like tactical RPGs. I thought Fire Emblem Awakening was great, as did apparently everyone.
What if you took a tactical RPG and mixed it with a Musou game?
That'd be great. But is
that's
it better?
Kind of what it is.
See, that's, I think it's also the problem that I thought the first Fire Emblem Warriors was trash, but I've heard that this one's better.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. As someone who bounced off the first Fire Emblem Warriors hard and dropped like 30, 40 hours of the Three Hopes.
Yeah. But you did like Three Houses, shit. Right?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I got, you know, was working my way through a playthrough and then was like, wait, I need to do this how many fucking times to see a full story? That part I didn't enjoy. Alex, I feel like I haven't talked to you about how are you feeling about Fire Emblem Engage?
Very excited. And this is probably going to be like silly bullshit, but I'll probably enjoy it. The more they show off, the more they're like including all the legacy characters. You kind of get worried how they're going to represent them. Like, are they going to feel like the actual characters? And with the whole like them turning evil and fighting against you, and Marth has red hair now, like all that is. I'm learning to let go of this being like the next step in what Fire Emblem could be and just live with it as like a, hey, this is a game that's going to be full of fan service. And it's bringing back some things that I like in just the combat and the tactics side of things. So I'm going to enjoy it from that perspective. If the story is nonsense, then that's fine.
I think that's the thing that kind of confuses me, is that from what it seemed, it almost seems like it's a spin, like the idea of this game seems like it's a anniversary spin-off-y kind of thing, but it still seems like Nintendo's kind of like, this is the next Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, and like, that's a little weird to me, because like, especially coming off of Three Houses, which, you know, played it relatively straight. It's not like there's a lot of like, oh, remember Marth in that game. And this game just seems to be, we'll remember Marth if it was a full Fire Emblem game.
Right.
And Awakening did that, but I feel like the way the Awakening handled it was like, it was actually a part of the story. And it was all in the DLC that things really, you know, got so referencey.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, the combat stuff is actually looking really, really good. I think the map design seems a lot more thought out than it did in Three Houses. And some of the new tweaks, like the engage system, could be really interesting. I like that they're bringing back the weapon triangle after Three Houses decided to get rid of it for whatever reason.
That is like the thing that makes Fire Emblem Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of understand why they did it. Is like, it's, you need to have a lot of options. And so having like the weapon system and kind of having to build your team around the weapon system maybe lessens the sandbox. But yeah. I'm glad that we're going back to it.
That was actually one thing that I did like about the first Fire Emblem Warriors game, was that like of all the things to bring over from Fire Emblem, that idea of having a weapons triangle in a Warriors game, I thought was really cool.
Well, what's hilarious is that Three Hopes has the weapon triangle.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good. Oh,
so
would you say that Three Hopes is a more authentic Fire Emblem experience than Three Houses?
I might say that.
OK, so like if I was a real Fire Emblem fan, I would skip Three Houses and just play Three Hopes.
Sure. Sure. Okay. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Yep. You heard it here. I probably still won't play it, but
go play a Shining Force game.
I will. We should do a game club where you play Shining Force and I play Fire Emblem.
We can do that.
I'd love that. Well, I wouldn't love that. You would have a great time.
You should play some of the older ones. Did you play?
I've tried. Like, I tried the Game Boy Advance ones.
Okay.
And I couldn't get into them. I do really.
I can never go back. That's my thing with the Game Boy Advance ones.
Yeah, like Awakening hit, and I was like, oh, like this actually like really fucking works for me. And then I was never able to recapture that magic. Well,
Fates, like Fates is garbage.
It is.
That's, yeah.
And I think Shadows of Valentia like does a lot of good things, but then it doesn't, like, it's got maps from 20 the years NES. Prior that aren't great.
Suffers
and
from.
There's a lot of poison bullshit near the end of that game that I was like, this isn't fun. And then I looked it up and I'm like, oh, this is like not changed at all from the original Super Famicom game or whatever.
Yeah,
which is so upsetting, because like the first act of that game is so incredible.
Good. It's so good.
It's so good. And the presentation and the voice acting, the music. It's some of the best. Like, Shadows of Valentia has had the potential to be like the best Fire Emblem game ever made. It just then decided that maybe we should keep NES era map design for whatever reason.
I think like the first like half to two thirds of that game is incredible. Three Houses is I probably begrudgingly would say it's my favorite Fire Emblem since Awakening, because I think I do enjoy some of the school stuff, even if I feel like Nintendo miscalculated how crazy Sect of the Players are, where I feel like it's the intention where you're supposed to go through that and not recruit everybody, but we Westerners are just like, no, we're gonna min-max and get every single person we could possibly recruit on our first playthrough.
It was just like much like you won't buy every amiibo.
Yeah.
You also don't need to get every classmate.
Yeah.
Like, nope, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not gonna stop me.
Yeah, I might not use half of them ever again, but they're gonna be on my damn team.
I will recruit and romance all of them, and you can't stop me.
Well, see, I think where it's like in my first playthrough, I did the perfect one where like you try and get as many classmates as possible. And in New Game Plus, it's a lot easier to do that if you want to. But in those playthroughs, I just want to like
get through.
Right. Yeah, get through. They thought that you would do that as your second playthrough.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
The first run is always the golden run.
It is. I mean, I do tie it directly to that, like that Sakurai quote of like, just get the amiibo for your favorite characters, where it is like you don't understand some of your fan base.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we'll see. Maybe there will be some kind of reaction to that in Engage, where like it is designed more smartly as opposed to being like, well, you shouldn't get everybody, and then watches like every American just gets everybody because we need to have it all right now.
This is a dumb question from someone who's not paying attention. Who's making Engage?
Okay. Is the Gust thing official?
Everything I heard was Gust.
I know.
I don't think it's Intelligent Systems proper.
is involved, which I think duh.
Sure, they were also involved with Three Houses,
right? That was my question.
I will say it seems like officially, it's Intelligent Systems.
That is what Google gave me when I typed it in.
Yeah, I think Gust. I think Gust is involved in something related to Fire Emblem. They might have helped out with this game, but it is not officially confirmed.
Oh. Okay, so I'm
now
re-examining my view of this game now.
To be fair, when I look up Fire Emblem Three Houses, it also tells me it was made by Intelligent Systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's using the Warriors engine.
Yes, which the initial... Now, granted, this could all be running on a Switch Pro in all the trailers for all we know. But the gameplay we've seen so far doesn't look as eye-gougingly gross as Three Houses did. That was one of my other problems with Three Houses, is I found it difficult to look at for long periods of time.
I wasn't super bothered by it.
And that's, I found that different people are affected by different graphical deficiencies. I think my issue with Three Houses is it used a lot of very bold outlines for its cell shading. But then didn't anti-alias anything, so they were just crunchy as shit.
Yeah, and I think I respond kind of poorly to like variable resolutions that change.
Yeah,
and I think that's why Xenoblade Chronicles 3 kind of looks bad in places. I don't think it always looks bad.
Yeah,
but when it just like decides to go super soft in some zones, it's like, oh
yeah,
what happened here?
You skipped Xenoblade 2, right?
Well, I gave it a shot.
What does that mean?
I played for like 6 or 7 hours and was really put off by the tone, and the tutorialization was off.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, maybe it's just the fact that I played Xenoblade 2 that made me get to Xenoblade 3 and be like, this is 4K graphics.
It is. I was talking, I mean, friend of the show, OG connectivity host Nathan Mustafa, I was talking to him because he's asked me about Xenoblade Chronicles 3 because he has an interest in playing it, but he hasn't gotten it yet. But he got Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, and like me, he's enjoying it a lot. And I'm like, and he was like, makes me excited for playing Xenoblade 3. And I'm like, yeah, when you get to Xenoblade 3, Xenoblade 3 is going to look like you just jumped 15 years into the future of video games.
Right.
And it doesn't even look that great. It's just compared to Pokemon, it's like a different element.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Pokemon has a problem of like, it's low resolution, it looks ugly graphically, and it runs poorly. Like, at least Xenoblade is just low resolution. Like, it hits the other ones okay.
It is wild, like, how much I love Pokemon, but it just looks so bad.
I mean, I guess this came out, like, while we were recording last week, but it's one of the only games that Nintendo has put out an official statement saying, yeah, we're sorry, we're going to work on fixing this.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
that doesn't happen.
Was that Nintendo proper? Or was that
Well, probably Game Freak, but so 30% of Nintendo. If you were to gather 100 Nintendo employees, 30 of them would apologize for Scarlet and Violet. But that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it is also wild. I mean, like, it sucks because it's such a well-designed game.
Yes.
And then, like, just geometry fails.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a lot of times where I just, like, get, like, my little, like, Pokemon motorcycle, like, just gets stuck in something.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like, once you get the abilities to, like, float around and things like that, like, I just feel like I'm one step away from completely breaking the game and it being soft locked.
Which I do like.
It's kind of fun.
Free it is. Like, you know, it's not railroading me at all, and I appreciate that.
I wish they knew that the game was going to be that open.
Right. Yes, exactly. It feels like they allow me to do that. But unlike something like Skyrim, where it's like, OK, I'm allowed to do that. Or actually, a better example would be like Xenoblade X, where it's like, OK, you can jump crazy high, which means you can totally spam your way up this mountain. But the game knows you can do that and is ready for it. Whereas Pokemon is like, yeah, you can go anywhere you want. And then you do. And the game goes, oh, shoot.
Wait, like, you can dash with the bike? Crap. What like, were we thinking?
Oh, no. We weren't ready. But no, it's so good. I just wish it were good.
I've been so close to picking that game up for a while now.
That's the thing, is it's great. It just isn't.
Yeah. Like, well, I'm always able to easily convince myself to skip it, too, because there's a lot of things I want to play, and like that game needs to figure itself out first.
In 3 years, once it's done and comes out, I think it's going to be a really good game.
Yeah.
It's one of the best early builds I've ever played.
I'm excited for when they re-release it with, like, the expansion pass included, and I'll pick that one up.
Yeah, no, I'm very curious as to, like, how far they'll go in fixing it. And I do honestly wonder if Nintendo has kind of gone to Game Freak and the Pokemon company in general and been like, all right, this is make, like, because Nintendo does sort of have, like, especially, like, the more first-party Nintendo stuff, and Pokemon is sort of in, like, a weird spot, but the first-party Nintendo stuff sort of has a reputation for, like,
yeah,
Nintendo polish, knows their hardware. Like, the games that Nintendo puts out, like, yes, the Switch is old tech, but Nintendo's games on their old tech hold up pretty darn well to other consoles' games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Mario Odyssey holds up just fine against PS4 and really Xbox good. One games.
Looks really good.
And Pokemon just, I was looking at a comparison of Scarlet and Violet versus the, what was it, Gale of Darkness, the GameCube one. And it's and not hyperbole, it's kind of disturbing how similar they look. Yeah, it doesn't look good for the system. And it gives a bad impression. Like yes, the Switch is behind the other platforms, but it's still, like, more powerful than an Xbox 360. Like, it's still running Xbox One and PS4 games. Like,
it can run Crysis.
Right, it's not a GameCube. Like, why does it look like this? Gale of Darkness wasn't even a good-looking GameCube game. Anyway, we're going to have a Pokemon segment in every episode from here on out until they fix it.
Until more games come out and I stop playing Pokemon. I'm almost done. I've won one base to conquer, and then I'm in the in-game stuff. I'm loving it.
It has been like a week since I played it.
It's so good. You should go back to it.
I try. I can't talk about it yet, but next week I'll be able to talk about the game that I'm playing right now. Which I will just say that I need to try and finish it before this weekend so that I can decide if I want to throw it in the ring for my game of the year considerations. Ooh. Because I am loving it. So tune in next week.
All right. Well, I feel like that's a good tease. Alex, John,
episode 350.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big, yeah.
Talking about a game that John is excited about.
Unless it really falls apart in the end game and then we get to next week and I'm like, welp.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. Thanks, John and Alex, for joining me. You can email us listener mail. We love listener mail, to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. That's it. Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.